On this 14th day of November 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, text number 8. Jnana vijnana chiptatma kutasto vijitendriyaha yukta it yuchate yogi samalostrashmakanchanaha. A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi or mystic when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones, or gold, as the same. Purport. Book knowledge without realization of the supreme truth is useless. This is stated as follows. Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabaved Grayam Indriyai Sevon Mukhe Hijivadao Swayameva Sporatyadaha. No one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of Sri Krishna through his materially contaminated senses. Only when one becomes spiritually saturated by transcendental service to the Lord are the transcendental name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord revealed to him. Bhaktivedanta Sindhu 1.2.234. This Bhagavad Gita is the science of Krishna consciousness. No one can become Krishna conscious simply by mundane scholarship. One must be fortunate enough to associate with a person who is in pure consciousness. A Krishna conscious person has realized knowledge by the grace of Krishna because he is satisfied with pure devotional service. By realized knowledge, one becomes perfect. By transcendental knowledge, one can remain steady in his convictions, but by mere academic knowledge, one can be easily deluded and confused by apparent contradictions. It is the realized soul who is actually self-controlled because he is surrendered to Krishna. He is transcendental because he has nothing to do with mundane scholarship. For him, mundane scholarship and mental speculation, which may be as good as gold to others, are of no greater value than pebbles or stones. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chukshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Shri the Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Shri Parampara. So, Krishna is discussing the Dhyana Yoga process, the process of meditation, otherwise known as Ashtanga Yoga. Eight limbs, beginning with Yama, Niyama, the rules and regulations. Sitting posture, as Prabhupada said, sit properly, head, neck and back in a straight line. Pranayama, controlling the breath, which calms the mind, focuses the mind. Pratyahara, withdrawing the senses from their objects and bringing it within. And dharana, concentration, dhyana, meditation, and finally samadhi. These are the eight limbs of this Ashtanga Yoga process. So Krishna begins with this... discussing the mind. The mind is the key object in this meditative process. And if you recall from last week, Krishna said that the mind can be the friend or the enemy, depending on if it's absorbed in transcendence or absorbed in the external energy. So everyone in the conditioned state is walking around with the enemy inside. The mind and the real kicker is that we don't even know it. The enemy has taken over the strategic place within your consciousness. And the mind is filled with all of these desires and thoughts. And it generally is simply serving the senses. It is a gateway by which the senses look out, right? The eyes look out, the ears perceive, to see what is pleasurable, what is painful. And that which is pleasurable, the mind says, okay, go for that. Painful, try to avoid that. Sankalpa vikalpa. But because we're human beings, the intelligence is more developed. The intelligence is actually above the mind, as Krishna says in the third chapter. Indriyani paranya, indriye bhakparagmanaha, manasastu pura buddhir, Yobodevadasaha. There he says that the senses are superior to the sense objects, but superior to the senses is the mind, sometimes said to be the sixth sense, but superior to the mind even is the intelligence, and superior to the intelligence is the soul. Now, the problem is that the soul has given over, as Prabhupada calls it, the power of attorney to the lower self, to the senses and the mind. The senses are being dragged around by the sense objects, right? You know, and the mind is also being dragged by the senses. The intelligence department is calculating how we can achieve the sense gratification and how we can avoid as much pain. And the soul is just riding, perceiving all of this, completely unaware of its actual birthright, which is to be transcendental to all these things and immersed in eternal bliss of Krishna consciousness. So this is the situation of the conditioned soul. And any yoga process is meant to extract or bring one to the point of liberation first. Liberation from the dictates of the lower self. So as Krishna says very graphically, this is text 6. For one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. So we can also experience this in our little attempts to meditate on the Hare Krishna mantra in our japa period. How the mind, with all of its impressions and thoughts and desires, is constantly taking away from full absorption in the holy name. And the real basic principle of our sadhana is bring, as Krishna says here in a few verses, bringing the mind back from wherever it wanders under the control of the kapas self, which means Krishna, which in our case means the holy name. When we're chanting, we're meant to be serving the holy name with that red mood and focusing on the holy name. And it's difficult. We experience it every morning, but that's the process. So then he says that if you conquer the mind, the super soul is already reached. Now, what does that mean? If the mind is completely pacified and clear and calm, then one will naturally perceive oneself as one is, right? This is the famous Chaito Dharpana Marjanam, where the mind becomes cleansed of all of the disturbing desires and modes of nature and is actually placid. It's like a clear lens or a mirror. And you can see yourself and also the super self. And Krishna says the super soul is already reached. And now, then he says, this is the attitude of someone like that. Happiness and distress, heat and cold are all the same. In other words, you transcend the dualities. You're on a different plane, Brahma-Bhuta plane. And then he goes on to describe the verse we read today. A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi for mystic when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. So here the distinction is made between jnana and vijnana. So jnana is knowledge. We're getting knowledge. We can just read this book, this Bhagavad Gita, which is all important to read it. But when we actually experience these verses of the Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna is talking about, that's called vijnana. It's almost like pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means direct experience. I was just reading the fourth canto, Dhruva Maharaj. You know, Dhruva Maharaj, he wasn't a Maharaj yet. He was just a little small child. Prabhupada only calls him Dhruva Maharaj, even as a child. So what does Dhruva mean? Does anyone know what that word means?
Fixed.
Fixed. He's fixed, you know. He's so, just as a small child, he got these instructions from Narada, and he was so determined to get this kingdom, you know, greater than his great-grandfather. His great-grandfather was? Brahma. Yeah, Lord Brahma. His father was the son of Svayambhuva Manu, and Svayambhuva was born from Brahma. So he was determined to do that, and Narada taught him this process, even more extreme than this. You know, it was a process of combination, and this is what we have to remember, that whenever we read about Ashtanga Yoga, that it's not just pure Ashtanga Yoga. They're not just meditating on the self in general or even the super soul. Ultimately, it culminates in bhakti, as we will see at the end of this chapter, and certainly in Kapiladeva's description. You know, what's the object of meditation? He has this whole detailed description of the super soul, which is very beautiful, and ultimately, you know, the very first chapter is called The Glories of Devotional Service. But he does describe meditation. So Dhruva, he got this kind of specialized form of meditation, centered on the chanting of the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, seeing the Lord within himself, and also doing deity worship. That was part of it. He had you can do it out in the forest by making a little deity of mud, and worshiping and offering whatever he could gather like that. But the chief aspect of that was great austerity. You know, it's almost inconceivable. You know, the first month, he only ate the fruits that fell off the tree every third day or something. I forget all the details. Next month, he ate the leaves and the bark every fifth day. And after that, he was just eating dried grass. And then he wasn't eating at all. He was just breathing. And after all, he was only breathing every few days. And he became so fixed, and the whole universal breathing was linked. I mean, all the time he's chanting, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo. You know, so you can see how intense it was. So after 6 months, the whole universe was being entrained by his breathing, and the demigods were in trouble, so they begged Vishnu to do something. He came down, and he appeared before Dhruva. And his meditation broke. He looked outside, and there's Krishna in front of him. So what he was experiencing within, you know, became realized when he actually saw Vishnu in front of him. And then he offered these wonderful prayers, and it's a very dramatic scene, you know. One of which I quoted this morning, those of you in Mangalarti, it's Bhakti Mahu Pavahatam. That's one of his prayers. So the idea is that the sadhana, the practice, leads to more and more knowledge and culminates in vijnana, realized knowledge, actual experience. Now, it's not like an either-or situation. We also have some vijnana. We have some direct experience, even in a neophyte state. If you chant sincerely, you take part in the practice of devotional service, you attend a nice festival, there's some direct experience of happiness there, joy, ananda, little drops of it, right? So, but of course, you know, then we forget about it. You know, then our mind wanders a little bit. The body says something. We're not fixed. We're not completely fixed so that cold and heat, hunger and thirst, we can regard as the same, right? But still, there's an element of vijnan there. Otherwise, we couldn't go from day to day, you know? It's not that everything is in the future. Some is also experiencing as we go along. It's just that the experience becomes broader and deeper and more constant. Ultimately, there's this platform called Stai Bhava. You know, it's actually, you know, it's almost described here. What does it say? He is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge. Fully Triptatma, the self is satisfied always. Always, 24 hours a day. Stai Bhava means steady ecstasy. You know, you're always experiencing Krishna's presence. So the steady ecstasy, and then there's high points of ecstasy. Read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You'll see. Lord Chaitanya was always in ecstasy. But then when he would be in Kirtan, or Ramananda Roy would describe something more extreme ecstasy, you know, beyond, you know, even the limits that he was ever seen before. Right? Completely absorbed and exhibiting wonderful, never before seen ecstatic symptoms. But it's not like after that he was in some mundane consciousness. He's always in ecstasy. And so are his great followers, like the Goswamis and others. So, kutastha. This kutastha is just like Dhruva. It means fixed. Fixed in meditation. This is kind of samadhi. And the senses are conquered. One is yukta, is completely, the yogi is linked up to Krishna. And then, here's a symptom, samaloshtrasma kanchana, that you see gold, pebbles, and stone is the same. Now, who's doing that? You know, gold is highly valued, you know, this pebble's not worth anything, gold is worth so many hundreds of dollars per ounce, you know. But if your great value, if you're experiencing so much from within, then who cares, you know. Whether I'm in a palace or in a forest, you're still experiencing it. The bliss, that's overwhelming everything else, you see. So that's a certain level of advancement. The next verse says a higher level of advancement. Let's go through this purport. So this is a very significant verse. Everyone should learn this verse. Atak Shri Krishna Namani Namavagrayam Indriyai. With our present senses, Indriyai, we cannot grasp Grayam. We cannot understand the name, form, qualities of Krishna. It's just a mystery, you know. Like this morning I was mentioning, and last night we were learning this verse, Namachintamani Krishnas, which says that the holy name of Krishna is like a Chintamani gem. It is the very personification of rasas, or mellows of love. It is eternally liberated, it is complete, it is eternally pure, because the name is non-different from Krishna. Abhinadvan nama namino. You know, and I've heard Prabhupada say, you know, there is no difference at all. You know, now who can conceive of that? Can we really, you know, understand that now? I can't. You know, there's the name Krishna we're chanting, but the name that I'm hearing and that I'm chanting doesn't seem to be non-different from Krishna. Krishna's Krishna. If he walks through the door, it's he's all-powerful, wonderful creator of the universe. How is this little sound the same? You see, it's kind of inconceivable. So that's because we still have our material senses in mind. But Sevan Mukhehi Jivado, by serving Krishna, beginning with the tongue, chanting the holy name, tasting prasadam, Svayam Eva Spratyada. Now here's an important principle. We don't climb up to the platform of realization. It is not by our own strength. It is Krishna himself who manifests himself. In other words, it's completely up to Krishna as to how much revelation he wants to give us. Depending on our sincerity and our depth of emotion and devotion and sincerity and focus. That's why you find oftentimes in the scripture how very simple people, you know, or even animals, you know, Hanuman or Gajendra, you know, are highly realized souls because of their intensity of service and emotion. And you'll find great scholars and aristocrats and kings and yogis who don't know anything about Krishna, who are constantly being brought low or humbled by Krishna or his devotees. You see it constantly. You know, Ambarish humbling Durvasa, people like Kubja being exalted, you know, just a maidservant, Lord Chaitanya taking Haridas Thakur, making him into Namacharya. So it's completely up to Krishna. That's why Swayam Eva Spurachyada. Prabhupada again, many times he puts down mundane scholarship. Mundane scholarship is often an impediment. It's often an impediment. I was just remarking, because Matt was gone. Welcome back to Matt. Matt has a degree, right? College degree. I think you're the only one in this room with a college degree. And, you know, if anyone has a degree, raise your hand. So it's quite remarkable. And one of the reasons is that college oftentimes it takes you farther away from these things. You read this and it sounds unbelievable, you know, or you just in a different way of thought, or you commit so much to a certain way of thinking that it's very hard to come to, you know, Krishna consciousness. But whatever it is, as Prabhupada says here, mundane scholarship is not a prerequisite by any means of becoming Krishna conscious. So then the key is associating with the pure devotee. You know, getting that seed. We don't realize it so much, but I've thought of this a lot lately, how the quality of Prabhupada's books that comes forth, you know, there's such a variety of things that are going on here. But the thing that comes forth and shines so brightly is the absolute faith, you know, and realization that Prabhupada is speaking. There's no like maybes, or maybe it's like this, maybe like that. You know, and that certainty is something you can't get from any other philosophy book or anything else. You know? There's always that speculative, because I used to read these guys. Maybe like this, maybe like that, and each school has its different thought. You know, one conquers the other. But Prabhupada is giving us, as he makes very clear, not something that he made up, not something that he thought up in his head, but he's really giving us what has been given to him. You know, this is Baladeva Vijabhushan, who's also, you know, he's gleaning from the Shastra. As it says, we're singing with my friend Krishna Kumar this morning, you know, Nana Shastra Vachara Nayaka Nipano Sadharma Sangstapako. The Goswamis, they took from all different Shastra, you know, And they glean the essence and to establish eternal religious principles for the benefit of all people. So who's getting the benefit? We are. I mean, we can hardly, you know, even go through Prabhupada's books. What to speak of all the Shastras? It's a tremendous service. Invaluable. They've taken the essence of the essence. The Bhagavatam itself is the essence of the Vedas. And then the writings of the Goswamis is a further essential, you know, compilation to give us an opportunity to really make advancement and get this knowledge. And Prabhupada's commentary, his gift here in his translation, can actually impart the seed of faith, which is all important. That this is real, Krishna is speaking to us here, and that not only that, but important element of faith that we sometimes neglect, that we can become empowered to follow it. Because this is one of the difficulties, that even if we're convinced of the philosophy, say, oh, I can never do it. It's too impossible. You know, I get 4 regular principles, 16 rounds, I can hardly chant 1 round. But that's a lack of faith in Krishna. If he's all powerful, why can't he empower us? You know? And like I say, there's so many examples from the Shastra. So that's, by reading Srila Prabhupada's commentary here, he's emphasizing association with the pure devotees. That imparts the faith. And just by opening Prabhupada's books, you're associating. Never forget that. You're associating with the greatest devotee of modern times. And we're all benefiting from it. Okay, so we'll go on unless there's any question on this point. Yes, Prabhu.
So, it says a Krishna conscious person has realized knowledge by the grace of Krishna because he is satisfied with free devotional service. So, in order to attain full realized knowledge, it requires engaging.
Now, where is that quote? I'm sorry.
It's the second paragraph.
Oh, I see it. Okay.
So that's saying then that you have to engage in pure devotional service in order to gain anything.
Well, you have to know Prabhupada's language. When he says a Krishna conscious person, he's referring to someone who's purely Krishna conscious in this particular context. Has realized knowledge by the great because he is satisfied with pure devotional service. So that's coming from the text Triptatma. You see, Triptatma. So it means that you know if to be satisfied means that you're not looking for anything else. This is the definition of faith, really. Shraddha shabde vishvas kore sudidham nishchoy Krishna bhakti kore sarva karma kutahoy. Krishna's coverage defines real faith, which is really the nishtha in that progression from faith, shraddha to prema, is firm faith. That just by practicing Krishna consciousness, all my goals will be reached. This is a very high platform because the difficulty we have is that we get absorbed in Krishna consciousness, but then we lose that focus and we think we have to hedge the bets and do this and do that. And we're not fully satisfied just chanting Hare Krishna, just serving Krishna, you know. Because the senses are rebelling, the mind is rebelling, the conditioned mind, you see. And it's telling us, no, 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 you've done enough of that now. Now it's time to, you know. I don't know how many of you have chanted 64 rounds, but it's quite an experience. Because you're going along, you know, I'm doing pretty good, I'm 20, 24, you know. But after you, at a certain point, oftentimes, I had this experience several times, the mind is really, you know, rebelling more than it did in the earlier rounds. It's kind of, okay, already, you know, you've been going 5 hours, you know, now it's time to really think of something else. And you almost relive the fall from the spiritual world. You know, we actually relive that every day when we stop thinking of Krishna and think of something else. Because it means, like, you know, to be Krishna conscious means for eternity, what to speak of for the next, you know, 12 hours, to not think of anything else but Krishna, to be fully satisfied in just thinking of Krishna, serving Krishna, you know. And reading about Krishna, glorifying Krishna. So that's what he's talking about here, that you get realized knowledge, and because you're satisfied, the realizations come. You know, they come from Krishna, from that satisfaction. So that's why we have periodically, constantly, you know, okay, now we just had the month of Kartik. Oh, there's extra austerities and things that you do. You know, some devotees go to India, you know. You did a little special, you know, and you can see it helped you. You're glowing. I can tell the glow is a little more. Now it's 100 watts instead of 70 watts. But, I mean, those help. Kaddishi comes around, okay, it's time to fast. Whoa, it's, you know, it's Jagannath, it's the Rath Yatra. Now we have to all put out more and make it happen. So these are occasions why you can, how you can break through your kind of humdrum or your regular routine, which is okay, that's keeping you where you are, but you want to move to a higher platform. So when you get to the point where there's no ups and downs, you're just satisfied whatever service comes, then that's, you know, a realized state. And then on that you build, you know, that you build. It's oftentimes interesting to think about the different rasas, because if you study Chaitanya Charitamrita, study chapter 19, Madhyalila, the teachings of Rupa Goswami, he goes through the different rasas. Now each one is built on the next one. You know, the perfection, you can't really perfect Dasya Rasa without having the qualities of Shanta Rasa. Now Shanta Rasa, well, Shanta means peaceful, right? The main qualities of Shanta Rasa are that you're completely satisfied in being Krishna conscious, just thinking of Krishna. And there's no tinge of desire for material sense gratification. That's something to aspire for. But and the Dasya Rasa means that in addition to that, you want some active service. Not just thinking of Krishna, I want to serve Krishna. But I recognize that he's the Supreme God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know? So then you go up, and so the fraternal ras, you're completely satisfied thinking of Krishna, no question of sense gratification, and you want to be a servant, but a servant means he wants to serve the desires of the served as much as possible. The better you can fulfill those desires, the better servant you are, right? So Krishna enjoys playing with his servants on an equal level rather than just being served and worshipped as the great one, the powerful one, like that. You see, there isn't as much intimacy. You know, it's just like Prabhupada gave the example of the policeman, or the example that happened. It was one of the prime ministers of England. Who is it? I forget, Goldstone or something like that.
Gladstone.
And so he had so many people want to come and see the prime minister. So some important other minister came, or some ambassador came to visit him. And he was told by the secretary, "Well, Prime Minister Gladstone is busy right now. He wait in the anteroom, you know, for him. It'll be done." So he's waiting. He had an appointment. You know, it's half an hour late. So finally, he listened at the door, didn't hear much, and he opened the door a little bit to see what's going on. Maybe he had a heart attack. And there's the Prime Minister on all fours, and his grandson or somebody is riding him on his back like a horse, like, you know, horsey, playing horsey with his grandson. What's this? Well, this is what he really wants to do. He doesn't want to meet with this ambassador and talk business. He'd much rather play with his grandson. That's a different Ross. The grandson doesn't know who he is. He just knows this is granddad. You know? He doesn't know this is the leader of the whole British Empire, which was the powerful all over the world. You see? So Krishna likes that also. He covers his more intimate devotees so they forget that he's God, so they can play at an equal level. But the Shanta Rasa and Dasya Rasa are totally there. You see that? So let's go on now, because he's going to describe personal relations. It's one thing to see gold and stone are the same, but now the next verse describes a greater advancement. Is that okay? Surin Mitra Yudasina. Madhyastadreshabandushu Sarushapi Chapapeshu Samabuddhir Vishishyate. A person is considered still further advanced when he regards honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, the neutral, mediators, the envious, friends and enemies, the pious and the sinners, all with an equal mind. So Prabhupada didn't give a purport. It will be the next one, then we'll talk about that. Yogi yunjita satatam. Atmanam rahasistitaha. Ekaki yata chittatma. Nirashir aparigraha. A transcendentalist should always engage his body, mind, and self in relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. purport. Krishna is realized in different degrees as Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna consciousness means, concisely, to be always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. But those who are attached to the impersonal Brahman or the localized supersoul are also partially Krishna conscious because the impersonal Brahman is the spiritual ray of Krishna and the supersoul is the all-pervading partial expansion of Krishna. Thus, the impersonalist and the meditator are also indirectly Krishna conscious. A directly Krishna conscious person is the topmost transcendentalist because such a devotee knows what is meant by Brahman and Paramatma. His knowledge of the absolute truth is perfect, whereas the impersonalist and the meditative yogi are imperfectly Krishna conscious. Nevertheless, all of these are instructed herewith to be constantly engaged in their particular pursuits so that they may come to the highest perfection sooner or later. The first business of a transcendentalist is to keep the mind always on Krishna. One should always think of Krishna and not forget him even for a moment. Concentration of the mind on the Supreme is called samadhi or trance. In order to concentrate the mind, one should always remain in seclusion and avoid disturbance by external objects. He should be very careful to accept favorable and reject unfavorable conditions that affect his realization. And in perfect determination, he should not hanker after unnecessary material things that entangle him by feelings of possessiveness. All these perfections and precautions are perfectly executed when one is directly in Krishna consciousness, because direct Krishna consciousness means self-abnegation, wherein there is very little chance for material possessiveness. Srila Rupa Goswami characterizes Krishna consciousness in this way: anasaktasya vishayan yataham upayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyamuchate prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastunaha mumukshabhi parityago vairagyam paugu kartyate. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. On the other hand, one who rejects everything without knowledge of its relationship to Krishna is not as complete in his renunciation. The Bhakti Samhita Sindhu 1.2.255.256. A Krishna-conscious person well knows that everything belongs to Krishna, and thus he is always free from feelings of personal possession. As such, he has no hankering for anything on his own personal account. He knows how to accept things in favor of Krishna consciousness and how to reject things unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. He is always aloof from material things because he is always transcendental, and he is always alone, having nothing to do with persons not in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness is the perfect yogi. So, just to go back for a moment to text 9, this is an important distinction Krishna makes here, that there's the advancement mentioned in the text 8 of seeing gold and stone as the same, right? But this is much more difficult, is seeing the enemies and the friends as the same. The pious and the sinners all with an equal mind. So really our consciousness is formed most deeply by our personal relationships, isn't it? And Krishna consciousness is, after all, a science of personal relationships, beginning with the Supreme Person, but also all the other persons. There is a Krishna conscious way of relating to everyone, right? That's why we have this, the Madhyama Adhikari we were discussing this morning. What is that? Ishwade tadarineshu balisheshu dvishachucha prema maiti kipopeksha yakkaroti samadhyama. I think it's going like that. That there's basically four categories of beings. You know, say, there's the Lord, there's the devotees, there are the innocent human beings, and there are the envious, or the out-and-out demons and asuras, right? So there's a way of relating to each of them. And this, if one relates properly in this way, then one can be considered a Madhyama Adhikari, means a middle class or second class devotee, which we should aspire to. For the Lord, we should try to develop love and devotion, obviously. For the devotees, we should have friendship. For the innocent, we should try to lift them up, preaching. And for the envious, we should avoid them. You see. So that's making distinctions. Now here, he's saying that one sees with an equal mind these different positive and negative personalities. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that you don't relate to them properly, but it means that you see them all as spiritual beings, just as Krishna says in the previous chapter, Vidyavinaya Sampane. The dog eater, the elephant, the learned Brahmin, you see equally. What does that mean, Samadarshana? It means you see this. You see that they're all spiritual beings. They're all the super soul there, you see? So you don't relate to them on the external platform. Look down upon and have contempt for the dog eater, you know? He's an unfortunate soul. You know, that's he taking that body as a result of karma, you know? And here's the Brahmin, different set of karma. Wonderful, you know? But the point is you don't let that disturb your mind. Your mind remains as it is. And this is very practical. Anyone who goes out, you know, as a book teacher over years, you have to be tolerant. If someone comes with an envious attitude or a position, you can't let it throw you and throw off your whole day. You can't get angry, start yelling and screaming or punching, right? You have to be equipoise, you know? Let it just roll off and go on to the next, isn't it? So this is a greater measure of advancement. If one can remain equipoised, even in these difficult... It is said that the words, the unkind words of a relative or someone who was your friend and then they start insulting you or betraying you, are more, you know, hurts more than arrows piercing the body. You know? But not for the advanced yogi. You know? He's just... Okay, Hare Krishna. Why? Because you have that triptatma. You're always satisfied. You're basically concerned about what Krishna thinks about you, what Krishna's devotees feel about you. And if you're you know, an honest, sincere devotee, you know that it's going to be all positive. That positive reinforcement which comes. Now, I was just thinking about this recently. The deity, because we're in the deity worship chapter in the 11th canto. Why is it so important to come before these deities, you know? Now, the deities are always meant to be in this wonderful smiling mood, right? Very merciful, compassionate mood. And we can see, you know? I mean, who could deny it? So what does that mean? Now, we're meant to practice Krishna consciousness, come before the deities, right? And see them with as much humility and reverence and love and devotion as we can muster, right? That's the reward. The reward for your, you know, practice of Krishna consciousness is that you appreciate more and more the deity's love for you, their beauty, isn't it? That like this prayer I mentioned, you know, this Bilva Mangal, he prays that his mind will be flooded by the flood of bliss coming from the face of Krishna, the merciful face with a beautiful, gentle smile. This is one of his prayers. Now, who can appreciate that? Only the devotee. If some, you know, ordinary person walks in, and that's what the temples are for, people walk in. They don't appreciate like that. They're, you know, they see a stone statue. Sometimes they don't see the deity at all. They just see flowers, you know, colors, cult, whatever, you know. Whatever it is, their mind, they're not appreciating them. You have to be a devotee of some sort to appreciate. And the more devotional you are, the more sincere you are, the more you'll appreciate the deity and feel that. So when you're feeling that, then you go outside and some, you know, somebody rides by and makes some insult. Does that bother you? Who cares? You know? But if you're just an ordinary person, you know, and someone does that, it'll rile you, you get all angry and, you know, throw something or run after them or whatever. That's what's going on out there. They don't have that, you know, soothing reciprocation from Krishna, which is coming not only in the deity room, but wherever you're sincere, out on the street. You know, if you meet someone and they take a book, you know, and they, well, I'm reading these stories Vijay is writing, you know, and sometimes people come by, they're so appreciative, you know, of the books that they previously got, they want another book, you know, I mean, that may happen, who knows, once a week, you know, or maybe once a day, but it's so fulfilling. That's a reciprocation from Krishna. And then you can take so many insults and it comes right off you. So that's the realization of this verse. If you're situated in Krishna consciousness, friends and enemies you see, you know, constantly. You can keep your equipoise, which is essential. Now, next verse 10. Now he's giving some prescriptions here. Always engage in body and self and realization with the Supreme. Live alone in a secluded place. So we're not living alone, right? We're not in a secluded place. But if you're living amongst devotees, that's secluded. The key is you're not associating. You're not associating means you're not taking their association. But we're giving Krishna's association. We're giving our association, giving Prabhupada's association. So that's better than living in a secluded place. Arjuna could not live in a secluded place, and we can't either. You can't just go alone and try to chant Hare Krishna. You'll never be able to do it. You know? But it's possible to do it with the strength that comes from living together in an ashram. And that's considered a secluded place. It's considered a sacred place. In a few verses, Krishna will give directives. Go the secluded, sacred place, put the seat down, you know, like that. But this is it's better to be, in this age especially, amongst devotees in an ashram or in a temple situation. Now, the feeling of possessiveness, of course, this is key. How does one overcome that? By seeing everything belonging to Krishna. What's the first verse of the Isha Upanishad altogether? Isha vasam idam sarvam yat kinchat jagat yam jagat tena taktena bunjita magridha kasya svidhanam. You know? I like that word gridha. It's like greed. Don't be greedy for more. That is, the owner and control of everything is the Isha. You know? We understand the basics of Krishna consciousness. Everything is created by Krishna, right? And it's all meant for his pleasure. You know, if he's the creator, he's the owner, then this whole world, including ourselves, our own bodies, are meant for service to Krishna. That's the basic principle. And this verse says, everything's controlled and owned by the Lord. You're entitled to your quota, but don't take more than that, knowing well to whom everything belongs, right? So that's a basic principle. Everything belongs to God. Now, the devotees try to realize that by engaging things in Krishna's service. So the more that we realize that, the less we'll feel that, oh, this is mine, you know, for my pleasure. No, you know, the body itself that we have is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So what to speak of the things in relation to the body? You see? So that's the principle of yukta vairagya. As Prabhupada says, abnegation. Krishna consciousness means self-abnegation. Sounds kind of frightening, self-abnegation, you know. But actually, it makes perfect sense. Anasaktasya vishayan. Here's the yukta vairagya principle. Always remember, Lord Chaitanya's movement is based on that. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. Vairagya means not being attached to things. It doesn't necessarily mean giving them up. Your cars, money, you know, buildings, use them for Krishna. That's vairagya, you know. But being attached, you know, to one's little square on the floor and everything, that's not Krishna consciousness. You can have $1 million and be much more Krishna conscious than someone who's an artificial renunciant. That's described in the second verse. So anasaktasya vishayan, not being attached to the object of the senses, but as appropriate, yataham upayunjita, engaging them in the service of Krishna. Then one remains nirbandha. You're not bound up by those objects. That attachment for the objects is what's keeping us bound to this world. So you take that attachment and you give it to Krishna. Then the attachment goes to Krishna. Krishna sambandha. You want to be bound up to Krishna. You don't want to be bound up to this world, see? This is yukta vairagya. This is vairagya that's proper or in yoga. On the other hand, the impersonalists, they see everything as proper. Chikatiya means material. Even those things related to Hari, such as the deity form, the holy name, prasadam, the temple, it's all material. This is a hellish mentality. We heard that this morning. You see the deity as stone, you're already in hell. Arche Vishnu Shiladir, Vanadakisa. This is one of the elements. So, but this is the impersonalist. They're afraid of anything here, any varieties here. That's what nirvishesha means. We've been saved from nirvishesha by Prabhupada. Means no varieties. You know, wherever there's variety, it's maya. The only thing that's real is this one homogeneous, pure light of Brahman. That's me. Aham Brahmasmi. I am that Brahman. I am. You know, I am that I am. So then, mumukshubi, parityago. They give up everything. You see the difference? The word tyaga and vairagya. There's two different things. Give up everything. They try. They really can't. But you try to renounce. Literally, you know. This is called pogal vairagya, weak. Weak vairagya. It's not real vairagya. Prabhupada gives the example, it's in a classic analogy, of the Pulgu River. There's a Pulgu River that, like many rivers, during the rainy season it's full of water, but in the dry season it dries up and there's no water in it. You know, it's just a riverbed. But it's still a little moist, and if you put your hand in there, you'll feel some water below. So similarly, the heart of these Pulgu Vairagis, the impersonalists, they look like they're renounced, but you reach in a little bit and there's this desire to be God, to be Brahman, Super Brahman, you know. And they cannot also remain aloof from this world, because the living entity by nature wants relationship with the Supreme and wants the, you know, this transcendental sense activity. That's all denied by the impersonalists. So this is the difference between Yukta Vairagya and Pulgu Vairagya. These verses should be understood. So devotees are definitely meant to be Yukta Vairagis, you know. But the Vairagya has to be there. And that detachment from the things of this world for sense gratification. But attachment to the things that can be used in Krishna service. Not for oneself, but for Krishna service. That's the idea. Okay, so we're kind of running low on time. Any further comments? Yes, Prabhu?
I had two questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're saying how this process of Ashtanga Yoga accumulates in bhakti and service?
I'm sorry?
You said...
If it's proper,
if it's properly... So when they see Vishnu, they naturally want to serve?
Yes.
Okay, but so that would mean they can only reach the Vaikuntha highest, right? They can't... Never, they,
well,
by this process, can they reach Goloka or not?
Well, generally, the meditators, if you study Kapila Dev, he describes Vishnu in the heart, you know, and you get this sense that it's devotional service, but it is in awe and reverence because he's seeing the Vishnu form with the four hands and all these things. So yeah, they can go to Vaikuntha. They can, because the yogis, if they're successful in the devotional path, then they'll want to, you know, serve the Lakshmi Narayan. But the idea here is that these elements that Krishna will describe of concentration and renunciation, these are also there in devotional service. We're also meant to become completely absorbed, meditating on Krishna. You read the stories of our great acharyas. They became completely absorbed. Or Lord Chaitanya, he wouldn't even know about the external world. Completely thinking of Krishna and meditating on, you know, Goloka Vrindavan and Radha and Krishna and the gopis and things like that. That's full meditation. But it's beyond, you know, it doesn't depend at all on this sitting this way and breathing this way. That's not part of it. It's more natural than that. You see what I'm saying? The important, and then we'll end here, is at the end of this chapter, there's a statement that the greatest yogi is he is always thinking of me with the heart, with great faith, and worshiping me, right? The word bhajate is used for the first time. The next verse, 7th chapter, text 1, maya sakta mana parta. Now, Arjuna, I'm going to teach you how your mind can be naturally attracted to me. Rather than the whole thing of sitting and forcing the mind and breathing and all that, it's a secluded place, don't make distraction. In the middle of this city, you can see me everywhere. And your mind will be attracted to me. You'll see that, earth, water, fire, air, ether, or the workings of the senses, the whatever light I see, whatever fragrance I smell, whatever sound I hear, it's Krishna. How can you forget Krishna if you can remember that? You see? So the mind, if it's naturally attracted to Krishna, where's the need for meditation? You're already naturally absorbed, you see? So this is where bhakti excels. It gives us a way that the mind can become absorbed in Krishna, you know, through this practice. And it's much more natural and practical for us. Here we are sitting here. I don't think anyone has been raised in a yogi family and all these things. But we're practicing yoga, you know, and we'll practice the most easy yoga in about 1 minute. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.